Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Before I vote on this, I had a question with regards to the new language that's inserted in the bill, and that is the language would limit the lottery to those ticket holders present in person, except for commercial, industrial, agricultural land. Why not have it apply to all the lands, or what were the arguments for exempting from that requirement commercial land, for example, because a lot of times that's as important in the community as residential land, sometimes more so. And the question I had is, why may an applicant only be represented by an agent for those types of property?
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, the question goes back to my original argument that my main concern is for the people who need the land but don't have a lot of money. I just make the assumption that people who are bidding on commercial property, and when I look at the disposal and the appraised value of that property, that's normally in amounts that those people can afford to be there. They can afford to bid for it, then the people that I'm really interested in is not going to have the money to compete with them anyway.
Representative Hurlburt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I support Oral on this. I believe that this would cut down on the number of people that can file for several lots on one filing. In other words, they could file for a half a dozen and take their chances. It ups their odds of getting one. This would hold them down to at least one application, which I think would be good in this case.
Representative Malone.
Well, Mr. Speaker, one final consideration that at least has crossed my mind in whether the amendment should be adopted or the language remain as it is in the bill is that in some areas of the state there are no state lands available for auction or lottery or under the lottery program. That state lands just are not available, so that residents who happen to live within those areas, I think, are facing some difficulty. They may want to, for example, move to another area. They may want to build on the property, but they're facing some difficulty in participating in the program, taking into account the fact that the availability of land for disposal under the program in some regions of the state is quite limited.
Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't have any position on this when I came here. I don't think it's worthwhile bringing one piece of information to the body, though, and it goes along with what Mr. Malone was saying. The great bulk of the land is available for disposal. It is anywhere at all near a road system is in my part of the state. Southeastern doesn't have very much. Anchorage Bowl is pretty well filled. There's certainly not much state land there. And so the great bulk of that land is in the interior, and it's being reflected in the way the disposals are going. So the amendment of the bill as it stands, I guess, gives the people in my area sort of a preference right over most people in the state.
Question for the House is the adoption of amendment number one. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take final roll.
24 yeas, 15 nays.
Amendment number one has been adopted. Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment number two by Mr. Rogers. This one has been duplicated and placed on your desk. It says replaces prior Rogers amendment on top. Starts page 18.
Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There is objection, Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A number of the members are familiar with the situation that we apparently have on state lands, that there are some 300 people across the state who are currently living on state land without the right to own or possess the land, commonly known as squatters. Now, many of those have built permanent residences and have been living on them for a number of years. A fair number of those, and we don't know exactly how many, did so during the period under which no state land was available. Now, I think there's no question that those who squatted on state land without a right to did something wrong. I think that just about everyone in this House would agree with that. But the question that I have is whether or not the state does a larger wrong by selling the land to someone else through any of our different six ways to get land. I'm not sure that two wrongs make a right. And at the beginning of the session, I introduced a sponsor substitute for House Bill 16, which would have given a preference right to these people to purchase the land at fair market value. Well, in discussions, a number of people objected to that, saying we were giving people something for nothing. So in the Finance Committee, I offered an alternative to that, which penalized the people by disqualifying them for all other methods of getting state land and giving them the right to lease the land that they're living on for the remainder of their life. There's been quite a bit of discussion over what the alternatives might be, and because there's a lot of disagreement in this House over exactly what the best way to treat it would be, I guess if the first version was a pardon for the people and the second version was an amnesty, what we have here is a stay of execution. The resolution asks the Department of requires the Department of Natural Resources not to sell, not to offer any state land that someone's currently living on for sale during the next year, that is before July 1st, 1981, if it's a person's permanent and principal place of abode and they've lived there continuously for at least 2 years, and it requires the department to prepare a report for the next legislature dealing all known instances of persons who are occupying state land without the right to own or possess the land. And I think the next legislature could make the policy determination on what to do about these. Now, the Deputy Commissioner of Natural Resources has told me they estimate that there are around 300 people. We don't know exactly. I placed on each member's desk an article about the one that's most visible right now. That's a cabin in Goldstream Valley in Fairbanks. A person trespassed in 1975, has lived in this cabin now for 5 years, and it's on parcel number lot 63 in the June 26th lottery sale in Fairbanks. With that is his letter. And Mr. Speaker, I think the state was wrong in not making land available during the mid-1970s. I think a lot of people in this body made campaign issues about getting land out to people. People were upset that the Department of Natural Resources was not making land available, and that no land was made available from the closure of the open entry law and program in about 1973 and until the legislature passed a new program. We've got a number of people during that period who wanted land, either were unable to afford the land or whatever, and went out and squatted on state land. A lot of people didn't, too, and I think that's a good argument. I went out and bought land in 1974. I didn't break the law, and I know no one in this body did, but we've got about 300 people who did, and I do believe it's important that the legislature address it in some manner to decide a policy. And I really question whether the current policy of, well, if we decide to sell land and there's a cabin on it, we'll just sell the land. I question whether that is the best policy for the state. I'd urge the adoption of the amendment.
Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the main thing that's important for members to remember is that this neither condones nor condemns the act of squatting. It just mandates that we find out who, where, and where these folks might be. So I would certainly urge members' support of the amendment.
Representative Munson.
I would speak against the amendment. I wouldn't have any problem in giving them a year. And then they could also bid on the land the same as anybody else, and letting them have the land for another year. I do object to the fact that what we're really doing is putting off this decision until next year, simply because I know that there are a lot of young people who are working, living in apartments, and saving their money to buy land. My daughter was involved with a group of young people that went down and squatted by Anchor River. And I lectured all of them, including her. And I said, you're not going to go down there and squat on state land. And when I heard the bill, I said, why did I give her such bad advice? Apparently, at this rate, she would have the advantages. So I think that it's a decision that should be made by this legislature, and at this time, I would urge members to vote against the amendment.
Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is a precedent in the early 60s when the first land bills apparently were coming through the legislature. A bill was passed that said anyone who was occupying a cabin as of January 3rd, 1959, that the department could offer him or her the right to buy the cabin, and I think there that I'm not sure how much that was exercised. I know that it was offered to some people, and some did take it. A year or two ago, we had a bill for cabins that were on Forest Service land that was transferred to the state. It didn't involve very many people, but we allowed those people a preferential right to purchase the land. And I think we ought to look at this situation in the context of the other actions. I think people want to get land out to people. Generally, those who squatted are were probably lower income people who couldn't afford to buy land. People who could afford to buy land did, as a general rule, rather than take a chance. And I think it's something that it's difficult to work out in the few days remaining in this legislature, and I think that the best thing to do is to defer the decision and try to work out something that protects the best interests of the state and all of the people of the state, including the 300.
Representative Halford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I read the preface to that 1960 legislation. It also says, when he determines it's in the best interest of the state. And I have a question to the sponsor of the amendment. I wonder what the cost of this study is going to be. And I also have a concern that the study may get more trespassers in more land that's not up for disposal into problems with the state than it cures in terms of the existing problems that are in conflict with disposals.
Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Halford touched on some of the concerns that I have in that there apparently is an estimate that several hundreds of people that may fall into this category, that may be considerably expanded as a result of the survey that the Department of Natural Resources would make under the amendment. I'm not quite sure what the legislature says to people that may have started camping on the land this spring, and if they decide to provide some sort of preference right for the people that happen to be there in last year, the year before that, and so forth. Mr. Speaker, I'm not going to oppose the amendment. I'm going to vote to adopt the amendment because I think the legislature should have as much information as reasonable to the subject before making a decision. I don't think any serious damage is going to be done by postponing the decision to get the information, but I would say that my outlook on it would take a whole lot of convincing on my part to recognize, in effect, adverse possession against the public.
Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, I think we're back in the days of the old cattle ranchers out in the old Wild West. I think the state's kind of in a position right now, kind of like the ranchers and the leaseholders were. They were legal in a sense, but we had a lot of our forefathers that were squatters. I don't think we should forget that. And I don't think this amendment is out of place at this time, because I think if we wait a year here, I don't think it's going to hurt anything in the disposal of our land. And I urge the body to vote for the amendment rather than turn it down at this time and give us a chance to go a little bit longer.
Representative Branson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to just correct an impression that Mr. Rogers might have made. The bill that was passed last year giving people who had Forest Service permits a right to lease their land, those people had legal permits, and some of them have been paying rent on it for 25 and 30 years.
Representative Rogers.
The bill we passed last year also would have given people a bunch of land for duck shacks.
Representative Randolph. House, please stand at ease.
Conversation. I was taught when I was growing up that two wrongs do not make a right, and I don't think that's changed any in my short lifetime. And I have told people in the Fairbanks area that have been interested in land disposal, just wait a while. There's a lot of good state land out there. And someday, if we keep working at it, we're going to get the good land out where people can have access to it. And if we pass this amendment, it will be an open door to anybody who wants to go out and squat on that particular piece of land that they've been looking at for these last two or three years and waiting for the day the state will put it up for disposal. And sure, this is a tough decision to make, but by putting it off for a year, all we're doing is saying we can't face up to what we ought to be facing up to. And I'd say now's the time to do it and establish once and for all that we're going to get the state land. You better follow the rules. Breaking the rules now is going to cause a lot more problems than
it's going to solve. Representative Guy.
I thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of the proposed amendment before the body. I have read and reviewed the article that was made available to the members. From reading all of that, I have come to a conclusion after historical review of the person's intent for any other person's intention that those people might go through. My feeling is that the intentions of those people that might be involved were really not non-speculative. They wanted a different way of life. They wanted to go in a peaceful way whereby they could occupy certain areas of land without causing disruption to communities or the government, state of Alaska, what they were doing was that they want to settle down whereby they could begin a new lifestyle of living. And I feel that the proposed amendment before us has some merit, and I feel that we should support it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
We have five more people in line. Representative Hurlburt. unless somebody has, you know.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I certainly agree with the previous speaker. I'd like to let it be known that at this time, when all of this was happening, people were very frustrated with not having any land. It was a futile effort to even comply with the law because there was no law. And that's not a situation where it was two wrongs to make a right. And I'd urge the body to adopt this amendment.
Question. Representative Randolph.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'm take a little bit of a contrary approach here. I guess I do that occasionally. Somebody said, I think it's the first speaker who I agree with, and I agree with the amendment certainly, that I think his amendment is probably a very reasonable way to approach this problem. I'd be totally willing to go for an amendment that settled the problem right now in favor of these folks getting the land that they've developed. So I think this approach of looking at it for a year is a really good thing to do. But I see absolutely nothing wrong. I don't think there's been two wrongs. If there has been two wrongs, they both have been on the part of the state if we pass this bill without something like this amendment in it. The first wrong was that the state takes control of the land and prohibits individual people from any way, shape, or form acquiring it. And they do and they do go out and do what has been the natural, the traditional, the American thing to do ever since this country was founded, is to go out and pick a piece of land that you want to utilize and utilize it. And build a home on it and plant a garden and do whatever else you do with it, and then go to the government authority and say, look, I'm using this 5 or 10 acre piece of ground, I staked it out, and I want a patent to it. That's the way this whole country's been established. For us in Alaska, the last frontier, the great big dream, everything that we all think Alaska's all about, and we're sitting here arguing over something. We've got, as somebody else said, we've got more land for a relatively small population of people than anywhere in the world, probably. And here we are denying people who have went out and spent 5 years developing a home, and longer than that in many cases, I'm sure, doing exactly what people have been doing in this country for over 200 years, 300 years. I think the amendment is an extremely reasonable way to handling the problem, and I would support it.
Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we have to put things into perspective. We're dealing with a subject that's a real emotional subject, squatters on land. But the facts are that last year we passed House Bill 66. It's a new land disposal plan. I stood here in the very spot, said we'll be back next year with a lot of amendments because it's a very technical subject. And it's going to be fraught with glitches. I think this is a glitch that came up during the course of putting together the first land disposal, and I think it's a good way of solving the problem. It doesn't speak to the merits. It just says let's find out what the facts are first before we address the problem. And again, I'd urge the members to adopt the amendment.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I support the amendment. Just a reminder that I also mentioned Finance Committee. I didn't be up there when the bill was being considered. When you deal with private land, squatters have certain rights. Admittedly, it's not a two-year period and a five-year period. It's 7 or 10 years, depending on whether it's an easement right or a right to ownership. And if you are on someone else's private land in a manner that is open, continuous, notorious, that is, everybody knows that it's happened and all that, and adverse to their interest over the stated period, that you can perfect title in that property. And that's been a part of American and English law for a long time. And the only reason it doesn't run against the state is because of the interest in Henry II in holding on to all of his land 1,500 years ago. Because adverse possession runneth not against the king, and we still have the descendant of that doctrine in our own current law. What the amendment does doesn't go so far as to give the squatters definite rights as against the state on a permanent basis, but gives us a chance to address this whole question. At the end of the session, maybe it's not a good time to be addressing it with regard to this policy. But we may be dealing with something that is antiquated and historically interesting, but perhaps they should have rights against all state land anyway. The amendment gives us a chance to seriously consider that over the next year and protects those who are actually using it and have been there for a substantial time. I support the amendment.
Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I could support this amendment if it also gave everybody else the chance to go out and build their house on any state land. And then we would be going back to this tradition that spoke of. At the present time, if somebody goes out this summer and builds a house on state land, I suppose they would fall under this and we would have a report back on them. But if they did it, as far as I'm concerned and a lot of the other people, it would still be illegal. And again, we are just saying, well, we're going to look at the illegal actions that these people have done.
Representative Guy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Historically, when Charlemagne was doing his own thing, we were doing ours. And I will say that there are histories of record which proclaim that certain areas, certain places, certain continents that were reportedly discovered. I have in mind Columbus, Baranoff, Captain Cook. Those people, when they were reportedly discovering various continents and various areas of various land areas, they were not discovering them. They were beginning to only realize these land areas existed. They were, I repeat, Mr. Speaker, they were beginning to realize that these land areas existed. Columbus, Baranoff, Captain Cook. And there were people that lived on those lands. Who had mentalities of benevolence. Those people that existed in those given areas did not plunder by land areas for trinkets. They sought only to live in peace. Although they had interruptions among themselves, which were minor compared to what is going on today. In historical review, Mr. Speaker, I feel we should keep those in mind. Those people that come in peace should be left in peace. Thank you.
Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Briefly, I'd like to correct a misimpression that some people may have. The amendment says that the person has to have been the permanent principal, permanent place of abode continuously since January 1st, 1978. Just for some perspective on the issue, at 5 acres apiece, the 300 people are occupying less than 0.002% of the state's land entitlement.
Question for the House is the adoption of Amendment Number 2. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take final roll.
22 yeas, 15 nays.
Amendment number 2 has been adopted. Will clerk please read the next amendment? We'll have to void that roll call and take it over. Question before the House is the adoption of amendment number 2. The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take final roll.
22 yeas, 16 nays.
Amendment number 2 has been adopted. Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment number 3 by Mr. Byrne. Page 1, line 12. After the word shall, delete make available for and substitute this language. Dispose of to.
Representative Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the amendment number 3 be adopted.
There is objection, Representative Byrne.
Okay, Mr. Speaker, it's a it's a minor technical amendment, but I think it's an important one that we should consider. The it's language is on line 12 on first page of the bill, and it says, you know, the commissioner during the fiscal year June 30th, 1981, the commissioner of natural resources shall, in the current language, shall make available for private ownership at least 100,000 acres of state land, which is contained in the land disposal bank, et cetera. The amendment that I'm proposing here would simply say that during the year ending 81, the commissioner of natural resources shall dispose of to private ownership at least 100,000 acres. In other words, when you make a land available, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's transferred to private ownership. But when you dispose of it, it is being transferred to private ownership. There is a substantial difference, and I'd like to see the language change so as to mandate the commissioner to that action, rather than making it just simply an option of his. Also, in support of that, also I'd like to point out that one of the problems is that the commissioner has the, you know, the right to select the price of the land. He establishes what is called fair market value, and if he sets that at too high a value, the land doesn't move very well. So he can make all the land he wants available. He can make acres of land available, really, because it says at least 100,000 acres. So he can make 1 million acres of land available, but he doesn't have to dispose of any of it. We're not ordering him to dispose of any of it. We're just saying he should make it available. And then he sets the prices so high that the average citizen can't afford it. So if we require him to dispose of it, we change that language, as I propose here, to say that he must dispose of it to private ownership, then he's going to keep those prices down to a level that will permit, or that will encourage the land to be disposed of. And that's all I'm asking. And I think that's an important amendment. Thank you.
Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the old adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, comes into play here. I think it's good that when we're starting out early in this land disposal program, we mandate that land is made available, but I don't think they can make it.
Question for Representative Byrne?
I'd just like to respond to Mr. Miles. It's true that you can't make people take it, but if it, the price is right, people will take the land. Now, they're not going to take a lot of the land because the prices are too high, but if the commissioner has the pressure on him to dispose of that land, he's going to drop the prices down. Right now, he sets the prices at fair market value, and, you know, for example, on page 6, it says, on line 3, it says, the purchase price of land sold by lottery shall be the fair market value of the land as determined by the commissioner. So, okay, so he sets the price of that land as he wishes. True, he goes and gets appraisals of it, but appraisals are a variable item and can be high or low depending upon whoever gets them and for what purpose. They may not represent the actual value of the land that he's disposing of. I think this way, we're by putting the pressure on him to actually dispose of 100,000 acres of land, he doesn't have a choice then. He's got to dispose of that, and he's going to keep the prices down to a level that will permit disposal of that amount of acreage. And I would urge the adoption of that amendment.
Representative Miles.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the point Dr. Byrne is making is trying to come up with a fair price for land. We've certainly tried to do this in what seems to me to be a better way. We've gone so far, even in that same section that Dr. Byrne cited, as repealing, or at least in the bill, proposing to repeal minimum allotments or minimum prices per acre. So there will be no minimum price now. The bill becomes law.
Representative Byrne.
Yeah, one more remark then, Mr. Speaker. In that same paragraph right there on page one, we're saying we're coming up with a problem too. We're saying that the amount of disposals of land for private ownership by the municipalities, that's on line 15, made during the same fiscal year are going to be added to the disposals from the state. So in other words, as a practical matter, if the municipalities disposed of 100,000 acres of land, the state isn't going to dispose of any acreage of land. See, they don't have to dispose of any. That means they're going to keep the prices up. We got some problems here, and I hope we can correct some of those problems. I just feel that we've got to keep the pressure on the commissioner. He's not going to dispose of that land.
Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to speak in support of the amendment. It's been my experience that, particularly in things of this nature that are so that so lack in comparable appraisals, that when you order an appraisal on something like that, you can just about make that appraisal say anything you want it to when it comes out in its final form. Just by talking to the appraiser ahead of time, telling him you'll order an appraisal from him if you'll make it reflect such. And so to ask for an appraisal on land is not really correct, but a fair market value is what it'll move for. And if you move 100,000 acres and you set it so it will move 100,000 acres, that is fair market value. That's the most correct way to set fair market value, what will it move for. And I kind of agree with Dr. Byrne. If you price it out of sight, it just won't move. And it does mandate that it is actually set at fair market value. The amendment would require that. Thank you.
Question for the House is the adoption of amendment number 3. The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take final roll.
13 yeas, 25 nays.
Amendment number 3 has failed. Are there further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we have a brief at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. Will the clerk please read the next amendment?
Here's a copy of it. Amendment to amendment number 2 by Mr. O'Connell. Add new sentence to read. Nothing in this section is intended to extend or establish any claim to vested rights by a person who has entered upon state land without the right to own or possess.
Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment.
Is there objection? If there's no objection, the amendment is adopted. Are there further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative
Mr.
Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 223 amended House be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There's no objection. Senate Bill 223 as amended will be advanced to third reading. Will the clerk please read the bill in third reading?
House Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 223 Finance amended by the House by the Finance Committee. An act relating to the disposal and use of state land relating to the membership and duties of the Soil Conservation Board, annulling 11 AAC 53450C and providing for an effective date.
Point of order.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I believe the clerk read the wrong title. We're by the Resources Committee, I believe.
Oh, I did. Is it the same title?
Clerk, read the correct title, please.
I think it's, House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 223 Resources amended by the House. by the Resources Committee, an act relating to the disposal and use of state land, relating to the membership and duties of the Soil Conservation Board, annulling 11 AAC 53 450C, and providing for an effective date.
Representative Miles.
Mr. Speaker, this isn't going to be any fun anymore going through the dull parts of the bill. I promised the minority leader I'd go through it. I'm going to keep my promise. But I'm going to keep my promise short, too. Mr. Speaker, I think we all realize why this bill is before us. As I mentioned in earlier discussions last year, we knew there'd be glitches in the bill that we passed and the land disposal program we set up. In this fiscal year, we're proposing to offer 102,000 acres. The land is being taken under a number of different programs by Alaskan residents. There are a number of problems, and I'll try and go through the major points without boring anybody with the technicalities. That's what 90% of the bill is. It's mainly technical changes to the land disposal program. Next year, Mr. Speaker, the first major item is next fiscal year, the mandate of 100,000 acres to be offered. In subsequent years, there will be no figure that we mandate distribution. It was felt that the first couple of years we should set a figure that does go out because there was an obvious need and an obvious desire for Alaskans to have land. After next fiscal year, we'll put out what the market will bear, what the people desire. We're allowing the municipal disposals to be included in the 100,000 acres. The section there's a section early in the bill that puts requirements for lotteries and auctions to be in the recording districts in which the land is located or adjacent to. Just a physical problem of transportation and getting to the land, to the sales. The auction sale terms have been changed. Currently, they're 10% down, 10 years to pay. We made it a little bit easier, 5% down, 20 years to pay. We also allowed preference rights for certain people with existing legal claims, to wit, miners having existing mining claims, and folks who have grazing leases have existing grazing claims will be allowed preferences to purchase. Perhaps the most substantive change, Mr. Speaker, was in the remote parcel program. Currently, the lease price is $150 the first 5 acres and $50 in excess of $5 per acre. We just changed that to a flat $10 an acre. Sale price now is fair market value at the time the survey is approved, but that may be as much as 10 years after entry, so we're changing it, or we're proposing that we change it to be a fair market value at the time of the execution of the lease. Again, the sale terms are 5% down and 20 years to pay. We've learned a lot, I guess, in summary, Mr. Speaker, over the last year. We've got a good, rational land disposal program that is getting land to the people. I think these amendments make it just one hell of a lot better. And I urge adoption of the bill.
Representative Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Freeman had his half hour. I'd like to have mine. But in the interest of time, I'd just like the record to show that the Byrne speech number 6 was given and recorded there.
Seems to be getting more popular. Question for the House is the final passage of Senate Bill 223. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take final roll.
36 yeas, 1 nay.
Senate Bill 223 has passed the House. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the passage of House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 223, amended House, be considered as a roll call for the effective date clause.
There is no objection. The roll call and final passage will be shown as a roll call on the effective date clause. Clerk, please read the next item on the calendar.
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 10 by the Finance Committee. An act making a special appropriation for the Student Scholarship Loan Program and providing for an effective date. The Committee on HESS has had Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 10 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mrs. Buchholz, Chairman, concurred in by Munson, Buchholz, Byrne, Chatterton, Hurlburt, and Miles. The Committee on Finance has had Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 10 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 10 and reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Meekins, Chairman, signing due pass, Meekins, Moss, and Guy. Having no recommendations, Smith, Montgomery, Schaefer, Freeman, and Rogers. The Committee on Rules has had Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 10 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with the Finance House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 10 and recommends it do pass with amendment. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, concurred in by Cotton, Parr, Hayes, and Phillips. Signing no recommendation, Anderson, Miller, and Brown. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Will the House please stand at ease? Will the House please come back to order? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Finance Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 10 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
I object.
Representative Eliason.
Mr. Speaker, I object for the purpose of, would the clerk please read the original title on Senate Bill 10 and read the title on the bill that we're moving now?
Would you want me to? Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 10 by the Finance Committee, an act making a special appropriation for the Student Scholarship Loan Program and providing for an effective date. And the House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 10 by the Finance Committee, an act authorizing the Alaska Medical Facility Authority to purchase mortgage loans made to medical facilities in Alaska and to provide financial assistance to medical facilities in Alaska relating to bonds, bond guarantees, and bond anticipation notes for the purchase of the mortgage loans and to provide the financial assistance, creating the Alaska Medical Facilities Bond Guarantee Account and providing for an effective date.
Representative Eliason.
I remove my objection.
Is there a further objection? If not, the Finance Committee substitute is adopted. Clerk, please read the amendments.
Amendment number one by the Rules Committee. It starts page one on line 13. It has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the Rules Committee amendment.
There's objection, Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, after Senate Bill 10 left the Finance Committee, it was pointed out that there had been some argument as to what exactly would be the most proper way to go about this this thing we're trying to do here. If you assume that, and if you agree that that it's in the state's interest to go ahead and make this move we're trying to make here with the Alaska Hospital, then this is probably the best way to go. And the Finance Committee bill had a special account created in the general fund, and the opinions from the attorneys that the tallies finally came in, and they were of the opinion that that wouldn't be legal. In fact, we would have to appropriate these illiquid assets to the Medical Facilities Authority. And so the changes that you find in the amendments to Senate Bill 10 that the Rules Committee adopted do that. In addition, the last sentence on the page of amendments here. On line 28, we changed the word from one to two. In other words, we're requiring two MAI appraisals rather than one before the Commissioner of Revenue can make any deals on purchasing mortgages.
Is there further objection? There's no further objection. Rules Committee Amendment Number 1 is adopted. Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment Number 2 by Mr. Byrne, and it starts page 1, line 24. It has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Representative Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that Amendment Number 2 be adopted.
There is objection. Representative Byrne.
Okay. Well, Mr. Speaker, what this amendment does is probably, I think, goes right straight to the heart of the issue before us. Who's going to take the licking? Is the state going to take the licking, or is the present holder, the owner of the mortgage, going to take the licking? I mean, who's going to eat the loss? That's what it amounts to. And the way the bill is written right now, the state's going to eat the loss. I don't think that's in the best interest of the state. I think, like, is in any business, if the state's going to work this out, that whoever owns the mortgage today should take the loss on the mortgage. In this event, it's the union pension fund that owns the mortgage, and the union pension fund should take any loss that may occur. Now, maybe a loss won't occur, and if it doesn't occur, that's fine, then there's no problem. But if there is going to be a loss, if there is a default, in other words, if the bonds can't be sold for the full value, then someone has to pick up the difference. And right now, the way the bill's written, the state's going to pick up the difference. If we pass this amendment, it means that, very simply, that the existing mortgage holder, which is the union pension fund, will have to pick up the loss. I think that's in the best interest of the state to protect itself. This amendment simply requires that the present mortgage holder pledge some of its assets to secure the state so that the state's not going to lose any money on it. For example, if there's about $60 million involved here, and if the medical authority takes the can't sell $60 million. The first step would be to sell the bond anticipation notes. Okay, they're secured by the state assets. So $60 million will go out right away. Okay, that in effect would bail out the union pension fund completely. Okay, then they're out of it totally. Okay, then the authority goes out to sell the bonds. That takes them 6 months or a year to get that ready and do that. Okay, let's say they can only sell $40 million worth of bonds. Maybe a lender isn't going to loan them $60 million worth of bonds, because this act is repeals in just 2 years, and there's no more securities backing up the bonds. So they can only sell $40 million. Well, who's going to pay the additional $20 million then to the banks that put up the money for the bond anticipation notes? Right now, the way it's worded is the state's going to have to pick up that $20 million, we'll say. Say it is $20 million. It might be $30 million. It might only be $10 million. And it might not be anything. But if there is a loss, the loss, should belong to the pension fund and not to the state. And that's the purpose of this amendment, is to put the monkey back on the present mortgage holder's back and not on the state back. And I hope that we'll approve this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, the amendment sounds pretty good, and in that I certainly don't feel like the state ought to stick their neck out when somebody else is perhaps ought to be on the block. This is the first time I've seen this amendment. I just got through reading it. I wish that the sponsor would have given us a chance to review it, as we've, I think, had a pretty good chance to review the rest of the legislation. The bonded councils have given us their opinions on it. The Commissioner of Revenue has been personally involved in writing the legislation. And I suddenly see this amendment that puts another caveat in there that sounds good, but I'm not sure how to handle it because I don't feel comfortable voting for it, but at the same time, I think that the purpose of the representative offering the amendment, the purpose he stated is it's a good one. I think that there's there's some guarantees involved in the legislation already, and that that we're not going to pay more than what the hospital's worth. In addition, the letter of intent requires the commissioner to get at least two current MAI appraisals, and certainly, even though we're proposing to appropriate $58.5 million worth of illiquid assets, it certainly doesn't require the commissioner to spend all of that money, or to hold until tomorrow, huh? Somebody says. We've been holding this quite a while, so I'd just soon go ahead and discuss it now. And if this sort of amendment, I suppose somebody else could offer another amendment tomorrow that sounded good. So I'd just soon dispose of it right now. I think that there are enough guarantees. In addition, the commissioner is going to be able to require a reorganization of the board of directors of the particular hospital we're interested in helping. And by doing that, we think that it's going to improve the ability of that hospital to stay in the black and be a viable business entity. I don't believe that the 2 years down the line, when it's time to sell the bonds, I don't think we're going to be in any trouble. I think that the other people that have testified on the legislation agree with that. So I don't think that we're really at risk. But at the same time, I don't want to say that we are sticking our neck out when someone else should be on the line. I'm going to vote against the amendment just because I think that the person who offered it spent a lot of time working on this legislation and to my knowledge, did not let anybody know that he was going to bring something up as complex and comprehensive as this amendment. So I just recommend voting no.
Representative Byrne.
Oh, Mr. Speaker, it is true that this is a last-minute amendment, but it's also true that I was amazed when I read the bill that the state wasn't protected in it. And we got to work on this yesterday and just produced this amendment, and it was in final form just at 1 o'clock or 1:30 this afternoon. And I distributed it to every member in the House. But, I wonder why the state isn't protected in the bill. We didn't expect the bill to be up on the calendar today anyhow, because in order to get this bill on the calendar today, a Senate bill dealing with student loans was taken and stripped, and the Hospital Act was put on it. The bill, the House Bill 1030, is the bill that we were dealing with, and so things moved along a little faster than we anticipated here. But I was surprised when it wasn't in the bill. I don't see how the state's protected in that bill. If there is a loss, and that's a question, if they're going to come through with appraisals on the thing, and let's say they come through with appraisals, the appraisals can be based upon the cost of replacing the physical plants and so forth, which may well run $50 or $60 million. And then the appraisal will also should be based upon the revenues produced, the income produced. And if the income produced is not sufficient to retire the debt, then nobody's going to buy the bonds unless, there's going to be some guarantees in there. So we're offering a state guarantee so that the notes can be sold. But then when you come time to sell the bonds themselves, if there's a difference between the notes and the difference and the bonds, someone's going to have to eat that difference. And I don't see how the state's protected in this bill. It isn't protected, as a matter of fact, and that's why we offer this amendment, to protect the state from any losses. And if someone can tell me why the state shouldn't be protected, I'd like to know. But if anybody votes against this amendment, they're saying that the state's going to eat the loss. We're going to take the union pension fund off the hook. Maybe that's what we want to do. But if that's what we intend to do, we should say so. and get it on the table and not pussyfoot around with it. But if we're going to protect the state's assets, we should pass this amendment to the bill. The bill should have had this amendment on it in the first place. Thank you.
Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, this amendment doesn't have a thing to do with protecting the state at all. And I believe it's not the purpose of the amendment to give any protection to the state. There's ample protection for the state already included in the concepts that we're working with here. This amendment is introduced, in my opinion, after reading it, seeing what it does, in order to prevent the action that this legislation is trying to motivate. That is, if we accept this, I don't think it's going to be possible to get the interim financing under the, as I read this, it will be impossible for the state to facilitate that interim financing as we're looking at. I'd like to give a little history of my opinion on this. When I was first asked to try to get $55 million so that we could retain a community hospital in Anchorage at a relatively low rate so that people's health care wouldn't go up, I thought that the idea was a good one, but I said that there was absolutely no way we could do it because we didn't have $55 million rolling around in the Treasury extra that we could divert for that purpose. It simply wasn't a high enough priority given all the other things we'd already committed to. However, since then, we've worked out a way in House Finance and in other meetings so where this financing could be facilitated with no cash appropriation from the state and no loss to the state whatsoever in terms of cash and very, very little risk. In fact, we just pledged these illiquid assets for a two-year period and we don't even lose the interest. In fact, not only do we gain the interest on the illiquid assets, we gain the interest on the mortgage too. So we actually get more money than we would if we kept the illiquid assets in the Treasury. The only thing we lose, if you can say we lose anything, it has to do with cash, is the use of $6 million in cash flow. We lose the use of it for the next 2 years. We don't lose the money. We get it at the end of that two-year period, but we just can't use it for that two-year period. Well, that really doesn't have a tremendous impact on our budgeting. In fact, it has no impact whatsoever because they wouldn't mature. That $6 million wouldn't come to us during this budget cycle, so we don't have to worry about it in terms of our budgeting here. So now what we have is a mechanism, a financing mechanism, where we can facilitate this financing and get the benefits of that hospital to the people of Anchorage and the rest of the state without having to put any money up. It's a pretty good deal, and the risk to the state is very, very minimal. And I think the intent of this amendment is not to protect the state, and that's just a facade that's I think being forced onto the issue here to make it look like that. I think the attempt of it is to kill the bill in a way that isn't apparent. In terms of eating the difference, it was said that the state's going to have to eat the difference if the hospital can't generate enough operating revenue in order to amortize its bonds. Well, that's simply not the case because there's no provision in here whatsoever for the state to make up that difference. It would require an appropriation, and there's none in here for that, nor any language for it. The only way that we can go to the bond market is if the bond market agrees and believes that the revenue generated will be enough to amortize the debt. And if they're wrong, they eat it, not the state. So there's absolutely no danger whatsoever that the state would in any case, under the legislation we're looking at, have to eat the difference. It's not possible under this language. So the idea that this amendment is put forth to protect us from that possibility, which is non-existent, I think undermines the merit of the amendment itself. Also, I can't for the life of me see any connection between this amendment and the accusation that what we're trying to do here is get the union pension fund off the hook. It's my belief and desire that the administration should bargain as tough a deal as they can possibly bargain. They should get the lowest estimate and appraisal that they can possibly get. And they should bargain competitively against all other bidders so that they can get that mortgage at the lowest rate possible, at the lowest interest rate possible, so that the mortgage costs to the board that owns the hospital would be lowest possible, so that health care costs are as low as possible. I think that's what is the interest of the state. The state's interest is not in trying to get anybody off the hook or make any money to anybody, and that's not the intent here. And we have language which requests that there are appraisals, and in discussions we've talked about the need to bargain very hard, and I think it's apparent to most people that this administration would probably bargain in a very good faith manner with the Teamsters Pension Fund. So I don't think there's a problem there that somebody's going to be let off the hook. I think that's a non-existent problem also.
Representative Byrne.
Well, Mr. Speaker, to hear Mr. Meekins tell it, my God, it's such a deal. We should all have one of these deals. I'll tell you, we're going to make interest on it, and there's no danger to the state. Why do we even need a state guarantee on it if there's no involvement of the state? Procedurally, what happens here is that the first step is that the bond anticipation notes will be sold, and they'll be sold for whatever is required to retire the debt. The debt right now is at $59 million. As I understand it. So we're going to have $59 million in bond anticipation notes, and they're going to be guaranteed by the state. Now, a year from now, the authority then will sell the bonds to retire the bond anticipation notes. And supposing the buyers of the bonds, whoever they may be, and Mr. Meekins, I'd like to have you answer this question if you can. Let's say that the buyers of these bonds now, you know, maybe they're only going to say, we've looked this thing over in this deal, and we're only going to loan $40 million on this deal. We're not going to loan a nickel more, because that's all it's worth, is $40 million. You know, they're bankers, or, you know, they're financial experts, and they say, this deal is only worth $40 million. That's all we're going to loan on it. Then what are we going to do? State's got a guarantee on there for $60 million, or $59 million. So, what are we going to do? State's got to cough up the extra $20 million, doesn't it? I mean, how else does it work mechanically? Who's going to cough up the extra $20 million? The state's going to have to cook it up. This amendment says the Union Pension Fund coughs it up. Maybe you can respond to that.
Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, the only way that the hospital wouldn't eventually pay for itself is that the only way one can believe that is if one believes that there are too many hospitals in the Anchorage area, and that therefore they're all going to be underutilized, and the operating revenue then wouldn't be generated enough because of that underutilization. So if Representative Byrne believes that there are too many hospitals currently, meaning that there are two, and that it's going to be continued to be underutilized so that it cannot run in the black, then there would be a risk to the state. Because if it can't run in the black, then it can't go to the bond market, and eventually we're going to be faced with the same exact problem, and our guarantee might be called up. But we don't have to bail out that guarantee in 2 years. We can wait longer than that if it takes longer for it to go into the black. And I think it will go into the black for many reasons, not the least of which is that the Medical Society voted unanimously of all the members present, and a lot of those are doctors that utilize the hospital in the Providence Hospital. That the state should make an effort to keep the hospital a community hospital, the Alaska Hospital Community Hospital, and I think that's really a good sign because there really was a boycott of the doctors in Anchorage of the Alaska Hospital, and that's why it was underutilized. It wasn't underutilized because there's too many hospitals, and I think the Representative Byrne would agree with me in that case. It was because Providence had all the action, and they were boycotting the Alaska Hospital because of its affiliation with the Teamsters. Now that affiliation is going to be severed, And that's going to help. Plus, we have a commitment from those doctors that they're going to utilize that hospital and put their patients into it. And I think that there's a very real possibility that it'll turn into an operating in the black very, very quickly. I think before 2 years. But the worst case is that it takes longer than 2 years. That's no problem. We just wait an additional 6 months or a year or whatever it takes in order to satisfy the bond market that they can amortize their debt. And I don't think there's really any risk to the state. And again, the only way you can really believe that is if you think there are too many hospitals and too many beds and not enough people.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, a couple things. Representative Byrne did point out that this bill did start out as House Bill 1030. It was introduced by the Rules Committee. The HES Committee, at my request, changed it to a Senate title. No, actually, they left that one alone. The other one they changed to a Senate title. It moved to the Finance Committee. They put it on a Senate title because we're trying to get out of here, and it's an expeditious fashion and manner in which these bills can be handled, and it's quite common, and everybody knows that. Secondly, the companion measure, which will be Senate Bill 539, makes the appropriation of $58.5 million. And the appropriation is made to the Medical Facilities Authority. This will happen that the Commissioner of Revenue is also chairman of that authority, and in addition on that authority are the Commissioners of Community and Regional Affairs and Health and Social Services. At that point, that authority has the authority to use that much money. They don't have to. They can use a lot less. They get the appraisals. And as Dr. Byrne pointed out, in those appraisals are estimates of income for the hospital, what sort of a business venture it is. A lot of things are considered when you consider the value of the hospital. It's pointed out that there's special people have special training to make appraisals of hospital, and they consider all things like that, I'm told. So it may well be that the appraisals don't come up to be $58.5 million. In fact, I don't really expect them to, but we're going to allow for the maximum flexibility at the Commissioner of Revenue. The flexibility will be for the authority, but the Commissioner of Revenue serves both capacities. So it appears to me that it will be a safe venture for the authority to get into. And again, the amendment offered by Dr. Byrne, I don't understand it. I have trouble reading parts of it. If the bonds or bond anticipation notes are issued for the purchase by the authority of the mortgage loan, I would have appreciated him bringing that in a little earlier so we could have had testimony on it as we had on the rest of the bill. And I tend to agree with Mr. Meekins that, and I'm sure that Mr. Byrne wouldn't offer an amendment just to thwart what we're trying to do here, but I think that by offering this amendment, he's confused the issue more than necessary.
Representative Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, I certainly do appreciate the kind remarks of Mr. Cotton, but I did not offer the amendment for the purposes of obstructing or blocking this bill. It did get on the calendar faster than I anticipated, as I say, and I had to throw this amendment together in a hurry. The attorneys drafted it up and got it back to us this afternoon, and that's it. I just saw it at 1:30, or 2 o'clock, actually. I guess 1:30. But I asked the question again, who's going to pick up the loss if there's a loss between, the notes and the bonds? I mean, who's going to pick up that loss? And Mr. Meekins is saying, and Mr. Cotton also, that there isn't going to be any loss. Well, that's nice to say, but if there is a loss, who's going to pick it up? I'm inclined to think that there may not be any loss either. But as a responsible legislator, I think we have to pinpoint the responsibility for the loss if one does take place. And are we saying that the state's going to accept the loss if there is one? I think that's what Mr. Meekins is saying, is that we're willing to accept the risk and accept the loss. Or should we insist that the Union Pension Fund accept the loss? Also, Mr. Meekins pointed out that the that the he said that maybe it, in 2 years it won't be feasible. It might be 3 years or 4 years or whatever. And if that were true, then the state, you see, would still be on the hook on those bond anticipation notes with its assets tied up, guaranteeing that for that period of time. And that's also risk. I think the responsible thing to do is pass the amendment, lay it on there. That's, that language came from the attorneys who are involved in the act, and the language is accurate. It pinpoints the responsibility for any losses that take place, if losses should take place. And there might well be losses, and I think we have to identify them. And I think the amendment's a good amendment, and I'm going to vote for it. Thank you.
Representative Malone.
Speaker, just some comments on the amendment here. As I read the amendment, that whoever's holding the mortgage loan, a responsible mortgage loan at present, holding the loan, would be responsible for any possible future losses that might arise that affect any guarantees the state has. Speaker, I don't think that's a very likely thing that anybody's going to do. For instance, if you sell a house to somebody, they assume the mortgage on it. Or if you sell a mortgage, you're not in the position to generally guarantee those things forever. And I think that that's what this does, is ask for a guarantee on the mortgage from the present mortgage holder. If the assets aren't there to secure the debt, then the state shouldn't issue it. I agree, but I think the guarantee that would be called for under the amendment probably would be difficult or impossible to obtain and defeat the purpose of the legislation.
Question for the House is adoption of Amendment Number 2. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Representative Malone? Are there other members? Representative Hurlburt? Clerk may take final roll.
Yeas, 26 nays.
The amendment number 2 has failed. Are there further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 10, amended House, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There's no objection. Senate Bill 10 will be advanced to third reading. Will clerk please read the bill in third reading?
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 10, amended by the House by the Finance Committee. An act authorizing the Alaska Medical Facility Authority to purchase mortgage loans made to medical facilities in Alaska and to provide financial assistance to medical facilities in Alaska relating to bonds, bond guarantees, and bond anticipation notes for the purchase of the mortgage loans and to provide the financial assistance, creating the Alaska Medical Facilities Bond Guarantee Account and providing for an effective date.
Question for the House is the final passage of Senate Bill Number 10. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take final roll.
35 yeas, 2 nays.
Senate Bill 10 has passed the House. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the passage of House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 10, amended House, be considered as a roll call on the effective date clause.
There's no objection. Roll call on final passage will be shown as a roll call on the effective date clause. We have some other items of business we need to conduct before the Senate goes back into session at 5 o'clock. So if there's no objection, we'll revert to messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the Senate has passed House Bill number 560, GO bonds in amount of $18,100,000 for paying cost of energy conservation code upgrade and architectural burial removal for state facilities effective date with the following amendment. Page 2, line 2, under life and safety code upgrades, add $687,500 for the Sitka Armory. Change amount in title from $18,100,000 to $18,787,500. And so, House Bill 560, amended Senate, is transmitted for consideration. The Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill 561, Finance, GO bonds in the amount of $78,700,000 for paying cost of capital improvements for education facilities, library facilities, and University of Alaska facilities, effective date with the following amendment. Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 561 Rules, GO Bonds, $93,815,000 for paying cost of capital improvements for education facilities, library facilities, and University of Alaska facilities, effective date and transmitting same for consideration. The Senate passed Committee Substitute for House Bill 689 Finance with the following amendment. Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 689 Rules, GO bonds in the amount of $38 million for the purpose of paying the cost of capital improvements for water and sewer systems, solid waste facilities, and village safe water facilities, effective date, and it is transmitted for consideration. The Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill 563 Finance, GO bonds $100,720,000 for paying cost of highway, ferry, airport, port harbor, and local service roads and trails construction and improvements, public transportation and planning transportation projects, effective date with the following amendment. Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 563 Rules, GO bonds $122,775,600. That's the only change in that title. The Senate passed Committee Substitute for House Bill 691, GO bonds $4,218,800 for capital improvements for fisheries resources protection facilities, effective date with the following amendment. Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 691, GO bonds in the amount of $5,468,800 for the purpose of paying the cost of capital improvements for fisheries facilities, effective date, and it is transmitted for consideration. The Senate has passed Committee Substitute for House Bill 752, Finance, GO bonds $52 million for paying cost of cultural facilities, effective date, with the following amendment. Page 1, line 7, change $52 million to $64 million. Page 1, line 13, change $52 million to $64 million. Page 1, line 23, change $52 million to $64 million. Page 2, line 16 and 18, change $52 million to $64 million. And so, CSHB 752, Finance Amended Senate, is transmitted for consideration. The Senate has passed the following and it is returned. Committee Substitute for House Bill 562, Finance, GO bonds in the amount of $28,350,000 for capital improvements for correctional facilities, effective date. And it is returned. The Senate respectfully requests the House to return the following bills. Committee Substitute for House Bill 1022, granting authority to the Alaska Renewable Resources Corporation to exceed investment limits by investing $3,600,000 in Schnabel Lumber Company, effective date. And Committee Substitute for House Bill 1023, granting authority to the Alaska Renewable Resources Corporation to exceed investment limits by investing $1,600,000 to Alaska Timber Corporation. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
The Senate has requested return of House Bill 1022 and 1023 because there is a letter from the Attorney General saying that the bills are unconstitutional. Presumably this means they wouldn't go into effect if the Attorney General has that opinion about them. So the only way to provide any amendments to the bills is to return them to the Senate, and because they did pass them with no amendments to the House bill, so the House cannot take any action on the measure. So for that reason, I'm going to return them to the Senate to see if they can work out the problems with the Attorney General's opinion. Will the House please stand at ease? If there's no objection, we'll advance to reports of standing committees.
The The Committee on Judiciary has had committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 239 amended relating to alcoholic beverages under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 239 amended and, or 239 and recommends reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, signing due pass, Brown, Anderson, Martin, and Malone. Signing due pass if amended, Parr. Signing no recommendation, Barnes and Phillips. The bill has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker. No.
We'll revert back to the calendar. Will the clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Martin.
Point of inquiry, sir. There was a letter of intent for Senate Bill number 10. I wonder if that's to be passed or where we stand on that.
The letter of intent, I think, is for both Senate Bill 10 and Senate Bill 539.
Right. Is that automatically passed, sir, or does it need
a vote? Well, there'd have to be a separate motion, but we probably should wait till after we do Senate Bill 539.
Senate Bill 539 amended by the Hess Committee by request, an act making an appropriation to the Department of Public Safety for emergency medical services and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Hess has had Senate Bill 539 amended under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 539 and reports it back without recommendation. Report was or with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mrs. Buchholz, Chairman, signing due pass, Munson, Miles, and Chatterton. Signing no recommendation, Barnes, Hurlburt, and Buchholz. Signing do not pass, Byrne. The Committee on Finances had Senate Bill 539 amended under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 539 Finance and reports it back without recommendation. The report was signed by Mr. Meekins, Chairman, concurred in by Smith, Montgomery, Schaefer, Guy, Freeman, and Rogers. Signing due pass, Meekins, and Moss. The Committee on Rules has had Senate Bill 539 amended under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with the Finance House Committee substitute and recommends it do pass with amendment and attaches a letter of intent. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, signing do pass, Cotton, Parr, Hayes, and Phillips. Signing no recommendation, Anderson, Miller, and Brown. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 539 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There's no objection. The Finance Committee substitute will be adopted. Are there amendments?
Amendment number one by the Rules Committee. And it has been duplicated and placed on your desks, and it starts page one and two, page one, line seven.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the Rules Committee amendments.
Is there objection? There's no objection. Rules Committee amendment is adopted. Are there further amendments?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment number two by Mr. Cotton. Page one, line 14. Before the word the, add the Alaska Medical Facilities Authority for deposit in.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
Is there objection? There's no objection. Amendment number two is adopted. Are there further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 539 amended House be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There's no objection. Senate Bill 539 will be advanced to third reading. Will the clerk please read the bill in third reading?
House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 539 Finance amended by the House by the Finance Committee, an act making appropriations to the Alaska Medical Facilities Bond Guarantee Account and to the Department of Public Safety for emergency medical services and providing for effective dates.
Question before the House is the final passage of Senate Bill number 539. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take final roll.
33 yeas, 2 nays.
Senate Bill 539 has passed the House. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the passage of House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 539, amended House, be considered as a roll call for the effective date clauses.
There's no objection. Roll call and final passage will be shown as roll call on the effective date clause. Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt a letter of intent that would reference to both Senate Bills 10 and 539. There should be a copy of the letter of intent on everyone's desk.
Object.
There is objection. The motion for the body is a motion to adopt the letter of intent, Senate Bill 10 and Senate Bill 539. Representative Byrne.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I wonder if it would be possible to get some stronger language in there to require the commissioner to secure the facility at the lowest possible price. I wonder if we're putting enough pressure on the commissioner to bargain seriously with the pension fund. Seems to me that letter of intent could be strengthened a little bit so that the commissioner got the message. Also, another question I had too on this is that the letter of intent doesn't mention the fact that the Alaska Hospital still owns an office building which across town, which it just rents out, rents to the city of Anchorage, as a matter of fact. And I wondered, why that isn't a requirement that we require them to dispose of that and reduce the mortgage accordingly. Why should the state assume? I mean, it's totally incidental to the purposes of the Alaska Hospital, and so why should they keep this other asset when it's worth several millions of dollars, and the that could be sold and the debt reduced accordingly, and then the amount of the state guarantee involved would be less. And I think that should be in the letter of intent. Those two items. And then I never did see anything in writing from the Department of Labor. And I wonder if Mr. Cotton ever did receive any response from his requests to the Department of Labor, the United States Department of Labor, on that. If I could direct that question to Mr. Cotton.
Representative Anderson.
You have brief at ease.
The House please stand at ease.
Brought up 3 points. One of them was another asset of the Alaska Hospital, and I'm not familiar with that, except I read in the paper that they own an office building on L Street that's worth $2 million. I'm not sure what that has to do with this, but apparently someone thinks it has something to do with it. I suppose they could sell that to pay some of their debts here, although I'm not familiar with that issue. It hasn't been raised at any of the hearings I've attended. Now, I may have missed the hearing that Dr. Byrne brought that up. The other question was, how strong is the language in here? This morning in the Rules Committee hearing, the Commissioner of Revenue was very willing to help us with the language that was needed to correct the bills. And my impression from discussing the matter with him was that he wasn't going to go out and pay any more money than was necessary. And I think he's going to strike as good a deal as he can possibly strike. And as noted in the letter of intent, the commissioner shall only use that portion of the appropriation that's necessary to for the purchase, to guarantee the purchases. So I think that we may be able to word it a little more strongly, I suppose. I'm not sure what Mr. Byrne has in mind. I think this does it, though. I think it does it an adequate job, and I think that in discussions with the commissioner, he seemed like he was ready to go before we even had the letter written. That was what he had planned to do anyway. The third point that I was asked to comment on was my discussions with the U.S. Department of Labor. I have had several discussions over the last few days. Yesterday they had promised to send me a telegram, and I expected to receive it this morning. I didn't get it. I talked to the solicitor. Her name is Karen Ann Klaus. She is the solicitor for the Department of Labor. and she read me the contents of the telegram over the phone, and they indicated that, yes, they felt that, and they were ready to assert in court that the pension trust, the Teamsters Pension Trust, had violated the law by this investment in the hospital, and that they intended to pursue it. They were going to do something about it, but they could not require themselves, the pension fund, to divest themselves of this mortgage. But they could go to court, and they expected to win, and the court would require the pension fund to put the mortgage on the block, and someone else would become the new owner. So in this case, of course, we've agreed to step in and offer assistance. So the Department of Labor indicated to me that they were reluctant and had been, and this wasn't unusual for them to act this way, reluctant to try the case, as it were, in public by publishing a lot of accusations or insinuations or whatever. So I get from talking to the solicitor, it's my understanding that yes, that they did, and were ready to assert in court that the Teamsters had operated other than under the law, and they intended to do something about it. And that's, I think, the crux of what Mr. Byrne wanted to hear about.
Question for the House is motion to adopt the letter of intent for Senate Bill 10 and Senate Bill 14.